Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:21 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 7th. I must say it's very restful to have 2 long weekends in a row. It feels like a long time since I've had a vacation. I think it was 2019 was the last time. So certainly, I do appreciate subscribers' forbearance in missing 2 Mondays of commentary, but we've had an interesting day today because El Salvador adopted Bitcoin as a currency, and there's definitely 2 rationales here. The first is that it was a buy the rumor, sell the news event. We had a meaningful move up from 30 to 50,000 over the course of the last 6 to 7 weeks. So, with the implementation of Bitcoin as a currency, some people have obviously taken the opportunity to sell, and probably not least a good number of those Salvadorans. They all got, or perhaps not all, but a good many people were able to secure their digital wallets with a free $30, and they probably sold it. So, that might have been one of the factors that initiated the decline. One thing is clear, that it's a downside key reversal. I've been reasonably sanguine about the outlook for Bitcoin, and I was willing to hold it as long as the price was rising, but I've also been wary because I do think that we're in for a more volatile environment after the big peak that we saw back in March. So I was committed. I was basically telling myself that I was going to sell at the first sign of trouble. So I did that in here today. I took my profits in both Bitcoin and Ethereum. Now the price is well off the lows. So the big question tomorrow is, are we going to get follow through on the downside, which would confirm the peak of near-term significance? I do think at least that there's a near-term peak right now, because we've also had a lot of follow through on the downside, or we've had commonality, I should say, in the rest of the cryptocurrency market. Ethereum was also down nearly $500, also well off its lows in here today. And I guess falling nearly 25% in a day is a lot. So it's not that unusual that we might see at least some dip buying around the 3,000 level. But the big question for the cryptocurrency markets is, where's the new money going to come from? Because we've had a significant advance already, and it's been on the back of expectations for banks to start rolling out cryptocurrency wallets, on the expectation for El Salvador to become the first country, and then the expectation that there would be lots more countries would follow suit. But the big question is, where's the new money going to come from? Are we going to really see a lot of people opening Bitcoin bank accounts? And would that be enough of money and to sustain the price above 70, 80, 90, 1,000, or $100,000? In other words, where's the next trillion going to come from? Now, obviously, when we're in an environment where there are trillions being bandied around with abandon by central bankers, well, it's perhaps not so risible to think where is the next trillion going to come from, but you still need the money to come from somewhere. So what happens in terms of central banks is important, and we've had a lot of action today. So, for example, Australia is beginning to taper, but they've slowed down the pace of their taper, and that has taken some of the wind out of the sails of the Australian dollar. So it has broken its downtrend. It's broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and this is the largest rally we've seen in a while. So now the question is, are we going to get a higher reaction low? Will it hold the 70-cent level? So, and arguably it should be the 71 cent level. So the big question then is, how much downside are we going to see? The pound was also a little weaker in here today, and that is despite the fact that the revenue neutral measures that were introduced by Boris Johnson here today, and all the new money to be allocated to the social services and the NHS, are revenue neutral, so they're not going to expand the deficit any further. But yet, there aren't really big concrete plans to close the deficit either. And the pound has been largely range bound between about 136 and 142 for the last 6 or 7 months, so we're still at the lower side of that range. The big question for most investors is going to be what happens in China. Because when we think about what's going on in China, Evergrande, then the share price has been continuing to decline. And it looks bad on a nominal chart, but when we look at it on a logarithmic scale chart, well, then we can really see how much of an acceleration is going on here, considering that it was at 10 a month, well, just over 2 months ago, and we're at 350 in here today. And we're also starting to see that there's more speculation going on right now as to what happens with the rest of the Chinese high yield sector. So high yield spreads in China continue to trend higher. And we haven't really seen events like this since the onset of the pandemic or then all the way back around the credit crisis. So the real estate development sector is under significant pressure. And the solution for pretty much all of them seems to be that they're going to have to sell assets. Well, when one company has to sell assets, that's possible. And they might even get fair value for some of those assets, or they might have to take a small haircut. But when everybody has to sell assets at the same time, well, then there's a real dividend to be the first person to sell the assets because the last person selling theirs isn't going to get anything approaching their value. And this is the going to be a major topic of conversation in the boardrooms of property developers in China, because the government is leaning heavily on the sector, and this is a very significant proportion of the Chinese economy. And China Evergrande is the biggest issuer of debt in the emerging markets universe. So, what happens with China Evergrande and the wider high yield sector, and of course, a good portion of the high yield sector is also made up of property developers. Well, then all of that is going to weigh on the Chinese economy. And stock market investors appear to have already reached the conclusion that it's inevitable they're going to have to start easing up on some of the restrictions that have been imposed upon the entire corporate sector. So Alibaba was in positive territory in here today, and JD.com was also in positive territory, and now it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And it also was announced over the weekend that the company's CEO is stepping back from control of normal operations. So what we're definitely seeing here is really it's almost like a Svengali moment for the corporate sector in China, where a large number of the officer class are simply being taken out, and greater control is being exerted by the state over the corporate sector. But we are definitely starting to see the other side of that. So a lot of the restrictions that have been imposed seem to have already been done, and they're probably now going to wait and see how everything pans out. And the corporate sector is starting to do better. So a significant number of these US listed Chinese firms are popping on the upside. Pinduoduo was also in positive territory in here today. It's also broken the short-term downtrend. So there's definitely buying going on right now. And when we think about the CSI 300, then that's also rebounded in here today. It was up 1%. So we've got a short-term low, we've got a higher reaction low. It's now right in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's approaching the psychological 5,000 level. If it can push back above that level, well, I think we can then conclude that the Chinese administration might be very interested in exerting greater control over the economy, but they don't want a stock market crash either. So we're probably towards the trough of the credit impulse in China. And that suggests that while we don't yet have clear evidence of support for the property developers, then it's probably not all that far away either. And if we're at the trough in the credit cycle for China, it means that the time when we can expect greater credit, more money being printed, greater support, more quantitative easing, greater stimulus in China, which should help to support the wider global economy and answer one of those big questions, which is where does the new money come from to sustain bull markets? Well, we might rationally expect that that is going to start to originate in China, and not least because of the rebound that we're starting to see in the stock market. Of course, we also had George Soros being quite vocal again in here today about, and he was saying that the significant investment that BlackRock has made in its independently owned broking firm in China is a mistake because it could be eventually taken away from them. Well, there's definitely some rationale to that, and China has been quite active in trying to encourage people and particularly foreign investors into the financial sector, and there's a darn good reason for that. It's an insurance premium because what they are basically doing is they're diversifying their risk, and it's exactly how you think about how does insurance work. Well, Warren Buffett bought GEICO. GEICO was the Government Employees Insurance Corporation, so you go out in an insurance product, you find a lot of people that have a similar risk profile, and you put them all in a pool, and then you sell off the pieces of that pool so that you can diversify your risk from the pool. That's exactly what China has done with their financial sector. There is clear risk in the property sector. Most of the banks are extremely exposed. So, how do you diversify the risk if every single one of your financial assets has got some kind of exposure to the property market, and there's a bubble in the property market, and there's a lot of exposure? Well, it's simple enough. You go off and you find people to come in and buy it, and you promise them fat returns. And in a low return, low yield global environment, it looks really appetizing. And that's exactly what they've done. So they've gone off and they've opened up their financial sector, and it's going to be lucrative in the short term. But then the big question is, what happens when the property market eventually does roll? Because the kinds of warnings that Soros is making, they're not illogical, but they're not timely either. So the big question is then, when will all of this, when will these, I guess, when will the fruits of these kinds of decisions eventually be harvested? Well, probably out in the future somewhere, not quite yet. So it looks increasingly likely that we are at the bottom of the credit cycle. So when we then think about what's going on Wall Street, well, the S&P 500 was in mildly negative territory today, and the Nasdaq was in positive territory. And a good part of the reason for the Nasdaq being in positive territory was Apple. Apple was up in a reasonably dynamic manner, and some of the largest companies were among the best performers. So they are also responding to this, the answer to this question of where does the new money come from to sustain these exaggerated high prices? Well, it's increasingly likely that the USA will move forward with additional monetary and fiscal stimulus, despite the fact that the Federal Reserve is now talking about tapering. The real question isn't so much about what their intentions are, but rather what they will have to do. Bond yields are still quite firm. So we saw additional upside in here today. It was a new recovery high. We have two higher reaction lows, and it has broken the downtrend from the peak back in March. So it is looking increasingly likely that we're going to see additional upside in government bond yields. That will bring back to the fore the big question of how will government deficits be funded? And the onus of responsibility is likely to fall on the Federal Reserve to buy those bonds and fund the deficit, which is modern monetary theory in practice, because foreign investors are not buying treasuries right now. They've been rather reluctant to buy them, despite the fact that the dollar has been quite steady. So today we had the dollar finding short-term support and yields rising. So that's indicative of investors starting to raise cash. And we also know that something that's been quite apparent over the last 4 months is that in the middle of the month, we've had a wobble. And we're now on the 7th of September. So the peaks were back on the 16th, and we had another peak around the 14th. We had another peak around the 14th. So it's not unlikely that we should have another peak at some point in the next few days, and then a short-term wobble, probably 3 or 4 days on the downside, which would offer another buy-the-dip in environment. The VIX index was up a tad in here today. Of course, just because, and this is, I guess, where we start to think about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Because when a broad consistency is developing, nobody knows about it. And therefore, it's more likely to work. It's when everybody knows about the potential for something to happen that they anticipate it. So there is the possibility that because we've had this broad consistency evolve over the last 4 months, and everybody now knows about it, that the wobble that we had today and the rebound off the lows might have already been the pullback that could have been expected in the next 3 or 4 days. So just because something has happened in the last 4 months, the more people talk about something, the less likely it is in fact to happen because people start to anticipate it. And again, that is almost that's the market example of how the Heisenberg uncertainty principle plays out, because the more you know about the position of a particle, the less you know about its velocity, and the more you know about the velocity, the less you know about its position. So we're in an interesting environment here because the Nasdaq remains quite firm, the S&P 500 remains quite firm, and if we have these very short-term declines and then we see new highs almost immediately afterwards, well then computer programs will start learning to buy on shorter dips, and that serves the purpose of beginning to fuel an acceleration. Now, we've already had a very impressive advance over the course of the last few months, and it's really quite consistent. And there's an awful lot of commonality around the world. And when we contrast the S&P 500 with the performance of the ASX 200 in Australia, it's really quite similar, where we have these sequences of short-term ranges, one above another. And as long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It's a rivetingly consistent pattern of ranges, one above another. So now the question is, are we going to see this pattern persist, or because of the weight of new money, are we going to see it accelerate higher? This is a big question, both for the cryptocurrency markets and for stock markets generally. With bond yields beginning to push upwards, while gold was a bit weaker in here today and down in a dynamic manner, and it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So it's going to have to rebound soon, but most particularly find support above the $1,700 area to confirm a higher reaction low. So this is a meaningful decline, and it's going to have to be countermanded in order to clearly confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Silver prices were also in negative territory. That's rather odd that the silver chart didn't come up. I don't know why that is. Let me just try that one more time. Well, one thing that was, I thought, rather interesting is that silver was less volatile than gold, but then A number of other currencies were in clearly positive territory, excuse me, commodities were in clearly positive territory. Cocoa prices broke on the upside and are now testing the upper side of this range that's been persisting for nearly 4 years. Sugar prices continue to benefit from the freeze earlier on in the summer in Brazil. So right at the in the region of the 20 area have been quite firm but a little softer in here today. Now when we think about lumber, it was one of the best performers in the early part of the year, had an epic decline in the middle of the year, but it is beginning to steady. Now, what's interesting today is that it was limit up at one point and then couldn't hold the advance. So we're now in a more volatile trading environment, and yet it's still quite likely that the 400 area will hold, and that we're now moving into a volatile ranging environment where it'll be much less likely to trend. So when we think about the inflationary pressures that have been unleashed this year, what we're seeing is a rolling wave where some are pushing on the upside, others are pulling back violently. When we then think about the aluminium price, it's popped on the upside in here today and pushed on to highs we haven't seen in a decade. And it is worth just looking at more history to get some perspective here because it's been extraordinarily volatile over the course of the last decade and now pushing up towards the 3000 level. Supply inelasticity generally doesn't affect aluminium because bauxite isn't exactly a rare commodity, but Guinea produces the cheapest source of it, and with the coup that's just taken place there, it's putting supply in, I think, in question. So it does look likely that prices will start to push higher from here. And of course, one of the biggest inputs in aluminium is energy, and oil prices were a little bit softer in here today, but are still holding the upper side of this range that's been forming now for the last 6 years. So we're in a, I think, a bit of a change environment where there's some uncertainty being expressed. There's the scope that there could be some additional consolidation, but I think as investors begin to look at the way bond yields are moving, and what I find particularly interesting is the commonality that we see right across the bond markets, because this is an inverse head and shoulders that we have on 10-year yields in the UK, where you've got one little shoulder and then the head and another shoulder here. If it can sustain the move above the 1% level, well, then it looks increasingly likely that we're going to get a significant move higher from here. Then it's also quite interesting that German yields are pushing higher. And I think a good part of that reason is not just because of the commonality that we're seeing right across the global bond markets, but also that there's the prospect of a new administration and a good deal more spending in Germany. So bond yields are beginning to push higher. Now they're still in negative territory overall, but it does look increasingly likely that we're going to see German yields beginning to push upwards from here. And the one thing that I was worried about at the beginning of this year, and it wasn't, I think it was probably too early to think about, was that governments are going to have a great deal of trouble funding their deficits and funding their budgets when they have higher borrowing costs. Now, this is not a problem for Germany because they're still able to get paid to issue new debt. But it is likely to be a problem for other countries, and most particularly the USA, where the size of the deficit is extraordinarily high, the quantity of money being printed is extraordinary as well. Now, relative to the size of the economy, it might not be that large, and there have been occasions when on a debt to GDP ratio it's been not quite as high, but nonetheless the absolute quantity of money is extraordinarily high, and that is a major aspect of asset price inflation. So now the big question is, if bond yields are going to rise, and they do look like they are going to rise, then how long is it going to be before governments start having serious problems with funding their deficits? And that's going to put additional pressure on central banks. So there's a catch-22 situation. When bond yields are lower, then the global growth stocks tend to do extremely well. When bond yields rise, they tend to do less well. But when bond yields rise, then it puts pressure on governments. And when pressure comes to bear on governments, well, then central banks have to act. And then it pushes yields down and the growth sector does better. So there is, well, in that case, it's a virtuous circle. But now the question is, how long can that persist for? And that is going to be the big question that we have answered, I think perhaps before the end of this year, because bond yields look like they're going to trend higher from here. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.